The headlines. A court in Denmark convicts three members of an anti-Iran group of financing terrorist activity in Iran in collaboration with Saudi Arabia. Russia and China issue a joint statement calling for an end to NATO's expansion and urging the U.S. to drop its missile deployment plans. And the 2022 Winter Olympics kick off in Beijing. Almost 3,000 athletes from 91 nations will be competing as concerns about COVID-19 loom large on the Games. Hello and welcome, everybody. A Danish district court has convicted three members of an anti-Iran group of financing and supporting terrorist activity in Iran in collaboration with Saudi Arabia. According to the court ruling, the trio has found guilty of gathering information on individuals and organizations in Denmark and abroad, as well as on Iranian military affairs. The ruling says the information was passed to a Saudi intelligence service. The defendants were arrested 2 years ago and remained in custody since. They now face prison sentences of up to 12 years and potential deportation from Denmark. The defendants belong to a group that Iran blames for numerous terror attacks, including a 2018 bombing in the city of Ahvaz. The bomb blast targeted a military parade and killed 25 people. Iran has in the past said the group is backed by Saudi Arabia. Political commentator John White says this case demonstrates the hypocrisy of the West when it shows no reaction in case of a terror attack against Iran and even supports anti-Iran groups.
Well, this is just further evidence that MBS, the leader, Mohammed bin Salman, the leader of Saudi Arabia, is running a criminal operation much more than he is a country. And it's a rogue regime, and this kind of activity is part and parcel of this rogue regime's modus operandi when it comes to Iran, whose influence it fears and who's trying to push back against it on all fronts by means necessary. It's a welcome day for justice for the victims of that horrendous terror attack in Ahvaz in 2018, and hopefully there are more such convictions and there's more pushback. And we see the hypocrisy of the so-called international community, which is really shorthand for the imperial powers led by the US and the West, where there is no outrage against when it comes to terror attacks against Iran. Indeed, the terrorist group in question, MEK, is materially supported by US and other Western governments because of its anti-Iran stance. Well, the Saudis are able to operate with impunity. We saw that with the vile murder of Jamal Khashoggi a few years back. They're allowed to operate with impunity because it's strategic benefit to the US to allow it to do so. It gets political cover from the US and its allies because of oil, because of its strategic location, and because it's a major customer for Western arms companies. So the Saudis are operating with impunity, and until there is some kind of accountability and the leadership's held accountable for these activities, then I'm afraid this will go on.
The United States renews its allegation that Russia plans to invade its neighboring Ukraine. The Pentagon says Russia plans to film a fake Ukrainian attack to fabricate a pretext for a real invasion. The U.S. Defense Department says part of the fake attack by Ukraine would include videos of corpses and destroyed locations. The U.S. State Department has made similar accusations. Both departments have offered no evidence to back their claim, only saying that it came from intelligence. Britain was quick to react, urging Russia to de-escalate. Russia vehemently denies plans to invade Ukraine. It believes the West is deliberately creating tensions near Russian borders and says that Washington wants to drag Moscow into war. Russia says it's worried about its own security, stressing that the troop buildup at the border is aimed at self-defense. Russia and China oppose further expansion of NATO and urge the Western military alliance to turn its back on Cold War approaches. That was part of a joint statement that Russian and Chinese presidents issued at the end of their meeting in Beijing. Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping expressed concern over the advancement of U.S. plans to deploy missiles in various regions of the world. The Chinese and Russian leaders also discussed the need to broaden trade in national currencies instead of using the U.S. dollar. Their talks follow U.S. threats that Russian companies could be cut off from the ability to trade in dollars. That will be part of sanctions Washington says will impose on Russia if it invades Ukraine. The U.S. has also warned Chinese firms against evading those sanctions. Einar Tangen is a political commentator in Beijing. He says the world is at a dangerous time given the existing mistrust and misinformation coming out in light of tensions, including those on Ukraine?
Well, we're at an unprecedented, dangerous time. You have distrust and disinformation that's being spread. Russia accuses the U.S., U.S. accuses Russia. Now they're trying to add China. This on top of the U.S.'s apparent goal of keeping its hegemony by suppressing both Russia and China and any other nation that it does not feel is in tune with it. This is the kind of thing that happened in World War I when Great Britain was the great power and was trying to maintain its hegemony. So extremely dangerous. It's not that anyone wants war, but you could have these countries sleepwalking into one.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan says the United States and other Western nations have done nothing to help resolve the Russia-Ukraine crisis. Erdogan criticizes U.S. President Joe Biden's stance on the issue, saying that he's not yet been able to demonstrate a positive approach. Western countries accuse Russia of planning to attack Ukraine, a claim that Moscow has repeatedly rejected. The disruption of Russia's gas supplies to Europe is a major concern for the continent in the event of a war. Bahrain's main opposition group has denounced the ruling regime for hosting the Israeli Minister of Military Affairs and signing a security deal with him. It was signed almost 2 years after Manama established diplomatic ties with the regime. We discussed the issue with our guests during our news review program. Let's take a listen.
Bahrain's main opposition group, Al-Wafaq, says any security or military agreement between the kingdom and Israel is unlawful and has no legitimacy. Al-Wafaq says the Bahraini regime is in crisis and has no authority to take such actions on behalf of its people. The group also slammed the Thursday visit by the Israeli Minister of Military Affairs to Bahrain, saying it crossed red lines. During the visit, Benny Gantz signed the security agreements, the first between the regime and a Persian Gulf Arab states. Bahrain and several other Arab states established diplomatic relations with Israel 2 years ago under U.S. brokered deals. Palestinians see normalization with Israel as a stab in their back and a betrayal of their cause. To discuss this a little bit further, I'm going to bring in esteemed guest who join us from London, Mr. Saeed Shahabi. He's a writer and political analyst. Next to him, you have Madame Ghina Rabai. She's a researcher with the Bahrain Forum for Human Rights out of the Lebanese capital of Beirut. Thank you very much, both of you, for joining this broadcast. I'm going to begin with your reactions to this recent development. First with Mr. Shahabi in London. Please, sir.
Thank you very much. It was a black day yesterday when the regime in Manama received the defense minister of the Zionists, of the occupiers of Palestine, Benny Gantz. It was not only a normal reception, but number one, it is the first time that any Gulf state has signed a defense agreement with the Zionists, with the occupiers of Palestine. Number two, that he was taken to all military establishments, especially the Americans, to boast of the military strength of the regime, that it can rely on the support of America and Israel. And thirdly, this comes at a time when the regime wants to increase its security by signing more security agreements and also drawing strength from foreign presence in order to continue to disperse and also to resist the demands by the people to do some political change. So all in all, it was a black day. The people rejected. The regime does not have the right to sign such agreements on behalf of it. With any foreign country, especially if they are the enemies of the Arabs or the Muslims. And lastly, such big steps cannot be taken in the absence of public plebiscite, public opinion, public measuring the public opinion to it. Usually progressive countries will always go back to their people to ask them and to seek their opinion on such steps. The regime in Bahrain does not have stomach to recognize the existence of the people, and instead it is putting its weight behind the enemies of the Muslim and Arab Ummah.
Sure, let's get some evaluation of that from Madame Rabaie in Beirut, so what she thinks and how she reflects on the recent issue. And one other thing, Madame, is, you know, one may think that what is it that the ruling system in Bahrain wants in terms of this security pacts?
Hello, and thank you for having me. It's actually not what the Bahraini authorities want. It's actually what the Israeli wants, and the Bahraini authorities do what they're asked to do. So the recent visit of the Israeli Minister of Military Affairs to Bahrain, Benny Gantz, is because Israel's priority in Bahrain is for security purposes, specifically to confront Iran and any parties that refuse to normalize with it in the Gulf region. The people in Bahrain, with all their segments, whether opposition political societies that represent the popular majority, such as Al-Wefaq Society, and all civil society associations, consider Israel an enemy and reject any form of normalization with this enemy. Yet, despite this, we see that the authorities have normalized with Israel and are concluding agreements and treaties with Israel, disregarding the popular stand and the public opinion against Israel. This is because the Bahrain authorities are not based on a popular base and do not represent the people who refused in the first place to elect them. Therefore, every decision or agreement concluded by the Bahraini authorities, whether about its foreign policies and its relation with foreign countries, or with regard to its internal policies, are illegal decisions and agreements, specifically the decisions that violently violate the main and most crucial public stands, and more specifically the decisions that strengthen Bahraini-Israeli relations, which are but measures of betrayal of the Bahraini and Palestinian cause. It is important to point out here that the Bahraini authorities, before concluding the official normalization agreement with Israel, were actually secretly normalizing relations with Israel, and they were concluding agreements with it, among which I mentioned the agreement to purchase advanced espionage techniques from Israel, which the Bahraini authorities used to suppress their people and violate the privacy of individuals and prosecute citizens who oppose the official policies, and to suppress freedom of speech.
Interesting point. Mr. Saeed Chahabi, writer and political analyst in London, as well as Madame Rina Rabaie, researcher with Bahrain Forum for Human Rights out of Beirut. Thank you very much, both of you, for giving us your time and this news review. You have a good day. And thank you for staying tuned.
Welcome back. Another resignation from Downing Street team. A member of the UK Prime Minister's policy unit steps down, bringing to 5 the number of departures by his senior aides in less than 24 hours. Elena Narazansky was a special advisor to Boris Johnson on a range of issues. The 4 others who resigned were Johnson's chief of staff, his principal private secretary, his director of communications, and his head of policy. 3 of them were directly linked to the controversial parties that were held at Downing Street during COVID lockdowns. The British Prime Minister has faced growing criticism and calls to quit since news of the parties first broke out last year. Johnson is also facing public discontent over other scandals, including the refurbishment of his Downing Street residence. Our London correspondent, Said Puttas, has been following the story. He says many British people believe that it's 50-50 whether the Prime Minister will survive the Partygate controversy.
At this point, people are saying it's 50-50 for Prime Minister Boris Johnson. These latest resignations, on top of them, Munira Mirza, a head of policy who worked with Boris Johnson for 14 years.
It's important to remind our viewers that all of this is happening as part of what is now being known as Partygate. And in the aftermath of the Sue Gray report, albeit published in an updated form, a redacted form, meaning the full version is yet to be published,
reason being that the last minute, the Metropolitan Police, whose commissioner, by the way, is answerable to the Prime Minister, said that they were going to launch their own investigation. But again, the big question still is hanging over the Prime Minister's head, whether or not he will be able to survive all of this. At this point, we do not know because we haven't heard from the police just yet. We also understand that only 17 of members of his own Conservative Party have handed those all-important letters of no confidence to the party whip, the so-called 1922 committee, a bunch of lawmakers who do not have government jobs. But we all know that they will need 54 of those letters. We don't know if others have done it, albeit privately, so it's all under lock and key at this point.
From Europe to Asia, several countries report record-breaking numbers of COVID infections led by the highly transmissible Omicron variant. Ukraine on Friday reported almost 43,800 new infections in a 24-hour period. That's the country's highest single-day case tally so far. During the same period, Germany registered nearly 249,000 new infections, a record as well. Russia, meanwhile, logged a record of over 168,000 new daily infections. Moving to Asia, South Korea reported a record daily rise of over 27,400 new cases. The figure is up by almost 5,500 compared with Thursday. In Japan, the number of seriously ill COVID patients has crossed 1,000 for the first time in 4 months. Well, the 2022 Winter Olympics is kicked off in the Chinese capital, Beijing, with concerns about COVID-19 looming large on the Games. Some 3,000 athletes from 91 nations will compete across 109 medal events until February the 20th. Several countries, including Britain, Canada, and the United States, have staged a diplomatic boycott of the Games. They cite China's human rights record, particularly the fate of the Muslim Uyghur minority in Xinjiang. Beijing has denied the charges and dismissed the no-show as political manipulation and inconsequential. The Games will take place inside a closed-loop area, with everyone inside the bubble taking daily COVID tests and required to wear a mask at all times. Beijing is the only city to host both the Summer and a Winter Olympics. And Iran logs nearly 37,000 new COVID-19 cases as the country is battling the sixth wave of the pandemic driven by the highly contagious Omicron variant. The new figure has pushed the country's total case load to over 6.5 million. Nearly 80 cities are now designated as high-risk red zones. The surge has prompted authorities in some infection hotspots to impose new curbs. The country's death rate has, however, remained relatively low, with 57 fatalities reported nationwide on Friday. The decline is largely attributed to the country's mass vaccination drive. Nearly 134.5 million COVID jabs have so far been administered across Iran. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of the World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Thank you. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked.
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example.
Self purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. Please stay tuned.
عزیز من فبشر عباد الذین یستمون القول معناش نیست شما همه چیز گوش بدید.
الله in the Holy Quran Surah Az-Zumar Ayahs 17 and 18 states, so give good news to my servants who listen to the word of Allah and follow the best sense of it. From these ayahs we do not mean to listen to or follow anything you like. It means to refer to the good materials and select the best from among them. It also means to refer to the best practitioners of Islam, namely the infallibles. Allama Tabatabai, in his exegesis under these two ayahs of the Noble Quran, believes that the good news is not given to the public or any ordinary man and woman. The main recipients of the good news of Allah are the experts who organize the significance of the content they read or write. In the Battle of Camel, a person came to Imam Ali alayhi salam and asked him, who is right and who is wrong? I can't distinguish between the two. On both fronts, I see the Muslims who pray, recite the Quran, and are among the companions or relatives of the Prophet. This is the time when someone has to refer to an expert like Imam Ali alayhi salam to get the right answer to his doubts. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We'll leave you in Allah's care.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
America's annual inflation rate has hit a 30-year high amid the coronavirus pandemic, as well as a glitch in the country's supply chain. Supply chain disruptions across the country have been driving up prices and leading to a growing shortage of goods. Now, the government maintains hopes that the inflation could fall close to 2% by the end of 2022, yet a plethora of economic analysts find such a scenario very unlikely. U.S. officials are pinning their hopes on controlling the pandemic, which they believe is the main factor in controlling inflation gripping the U.S. today. The U.S. Federal Reserve is, meanwhile, shifting towards a tighter monetary policy to battle rising inflation amid supply chain snarl.
U.S. rising inflation.
Hello, everyone. everyone, and welcome to We the People. I'm your host, Daniel Arya, and in this episode, we'll try to investigate a topic that many are talking about in the U.S. media, inflation, why it is rising, who is to blame, and what can be done about it. In today's show, we'll be accompanied by economist, radio host, and author, Dr. Jack Rasmus. Our next guest, who will join us later in the program, is Breakthrough News host, Eugene Puryear. So do stay with us as we provide a clear and simple view of the complex economic problem that could only be solved via decisions by people high up in the power hierarchy, yet affect everyday Americans. Stay tuned.
As the inflation rages on, one often heard line of defense from the Biden administration is that the phenomenon of rising prices is a global issue. The U.S. president also blames inflation on the COVID-19 pandemic, which has indeed impacted the economy heavily worldwide.
Now, policymaking also plays a key role in the way that prices are rising, particularly because the gap between liberals and conservatives has been widening steadily since the race for the 2016 presidential election, out of which former President Donald Trump emerged victorious. With the current situation, there is little hope that inflation could be controlled anytime soon. U.S. inflation rate rose to over 7% over the last year to its highest point since 1982. So what is the reason for that?
There are two main reasons, I think, of why we have this inflation. One is supply chain or supply side. Supply chain means obviously for real goods coming in, being imported into the U.S., We've got a supply chain problem going on. That's a global problem, not just the U.S. But the U.S. also has supply problems within its economy domestically, especially with trucking and transport and warehousing. In other words, getting the goods once they come into the port, or even if they're produced in the United States, getting them to the places where people actually buy them.
Regardless of who the average consumer blames for the rising consumer prices, the inflation is definitely creating a political liability for President Biden. Of course, factory shutdowns in Asia and overtaxed shipping routes are rendering a snarled supply chain, but the nation expects their Democratic leader to address the issue.
So a large number of economists agree that shutdowns and supply chain woes share some of the responsibility for rising prices. However, they still acknowledge that there must be more to the 40-year high inflation, leaving many to come up with nothing more but poor management on the side of the U.S. government. So how could the rise of prices for goods and services affect the U.S. economy in the near future?
The rise in the prices of goods and services, it could have a huge effect in the near future for the U.S. economy. I mean, one major effect is, given the fact that it is making it more difficult for individuals to purchase daily goods, it could actually mean that consumption goes down. As people are struggling to buy what they normally buy, they will buy less of what they need, and certainly less of what they want, which actually means that sales will go down, which could cause a potential slump in the economy. And I think that is perhaps the biggest, immediate danger, but I think there are a range of other dangers that are also out there. The Federal Reserve will almost certainly start to increase interest rates this year, and that will mean that there are many companies out there that have been, riding on this free money, essentially, that the Federal Reserve is handing out to corporate America, that probably won't be able to pay their debts, and those debts will no longer be rolled over for many of them. So we could see companies start to collapse.
Inflation could really spin out of control and spread into other sectors. There are currently concerns about further inflation in petrol prices as crude oil prices also hit a 7-year high. As supply chains fail to keep up with supercharged demand in the U.S., officials are rushing to find a solution, but to no avail so far.
Since everything in the United States is produced for profit, whether it's a luxury good or whether it's something that you absolutely need to live, it's still being hit by the same supply chain issues. So the real responsibility here is the insatiable appetite for profit in corporate America and the fact that we don't have a system that keeps stockpiles of crucial and important goods on hand. So if there are major disruptions, that people are still able to get what they need. So it's really a function of the corporate restructuring we've seen since the 1980s in the United States to drive up profits, but we're seeing it's very much at the expense of average everyday people.
Those in charge, whether in the federal government, White House, or Congress, need to put their differences aside and work together to address the dire economic situation. Although the country seems to be thousands of miles away from that scenario at the moment. Why does the U.S. have supply chain issues? Who is to blame? And which portions of the society are most affected by it?
Those most affected by inflation are the poorest, of course, on fixed incomes or with low wages that don't get adjusted very well. They're the ones that pay the price. Businesses can jack up their prices, as we know they're doing. And, wealthy people can move their investments around to protect themselves. But it's people on fixed incomes, retirees, 50 million people in the country on Social Security. And then, of course, people in the lower wage segments of the economy are most impacted by it. Who is to blame? When this COVID hit globally, a lot of capitalist companies in transport, both shipping and transport and ground transport, mothballed a lot of their ships and fleets and equipment and so forth. And then when they came out of it, where were the workers?
Trillions of dollars have been injected into the economy during the coronavirus pandemic. Hence, a new wave of price increases is hitting U.S. consumers and businesses today. The initiative was aimed at controlling disrupted manufacturing worldwide, as well as global shortages of key materials. But has it been successful?
There's price gouging going on, on top of all that by businesses that can do it, that have monopoly positions. How long is it going to go on? A lot longer than they think, because this COVID great recession contraction has changed the economy structurally, fundamentally, both in labor markets and product markets, and soon we will see, as well, I believe, in the financial asset markets. So it's going to continue at least through the middle of this year, maybe even later. It's with us for some time.
Massive federal stimulus and new spending is often cited by the opposing Republicans as one major reason for current inflation. This is while President Joe Biden has clearly said that inflation has, quote, everything to do with the supply chain, unquote. So how has the supply chain affected the current inflation rate, and how long do you think it's going to last?
The supply chain issues, I think, have certainly had an effect. I don't know if it's the main effect, but it's certainly a major effect on the inflation issue, just because when there are a very limited number of goods and there's a marketplace where, money speaks and there's no other form of allocation, no other form of planning to distribute necessary goods, then the price is going to go up as the people who hold the goods are going to sell to the highest bidder. So I think it's playing a pretty significant role in a number of different industries. And I think that certainly it could go on for some time. And I think it's unclear because since you can't just, build a new warehouse or build a new factory or change everything you do overnight, since the nature of how the supply chain is working is something that, is going to, at least for the next few months, it seems to me, is something that's going to be very difficult to fix.
The inflation is adding salt to the injuries caused by the enduring pandemic and the messy economic recovery. High prices are indeed one of the country's biggest problems, as the government appears to be clueless on how to temper the pace of the U.S. consumer price growth. President Joe Biden, who the public views as the one responsible for the spike in prices, has shown little contrition for his handling of the economy.
The COVID and these other forces are related to each other and feeding off of each other, but it's not totally congruent. They're not the same thing. But when COVID goes away here, or abates a bit, we're still going to have the economic problems then.
Now, this all comes amid a serious decline in Joe Biden's popularity, a phenomenon seen steadily in nationwide polls. With the consumer price index increasing at its highest annual rate since 1982, the Biden administration officials keep boasting about their economic achievements, such as the Build Back Better initiative, which is still stuck in Congress. We asked Dr. Jack Rasmus what he thinks the partisan gap between Republicans and Democrats plays in the current economic situation in America.
What you got is the end of any kind of fiscal stimulus going on. The Build Back Better bill was shot down by corporate interests, both within the Republican and Democrat Party here. These interests do not want more social spending, programmed social spending, because in order to do that spending, you got to reverse some of the massive Trump tax cuts, Trump-era tax cuts, over $4 trillion in tax cuts in 2017, over 10 years, given to wealthy investors and corporations and bankers. That's the thing that they're protecting above all. That's why you can't get anything passed in terms of more social spending in Congress. Those interests have blocked everything.
The latest inflation wave is not unique to the United States, yet other major economies have seen much more modest spike in prices. If it continues, the inflation could indeed weaken the U.S. global empire and pave the way for new economic powers to aspire. The world's largest economy appears to be in tatters, and no specific roadmap seems to be ahead. The issue could most probably turn political in a year that the Republicans are hoping to gain power in Congress, both chambers of which are currently in control of the Democratic Party. Generally speaking, how is the Biden administration handling of the U.S. economy after almost a year into the Democratic president's tenure?
I think the Biden administration's handling of the current crisis has been, mainly deficient. I think there's some elements that they've done that, move in the right direction. I mean, certainly the fact that they've been targeting the role of monopoly, at least rhetorically targeting the role of monopoly in rising prices, is, I think, something that's both good and to some degree encouraging. But I think by and large, the Biden administration has shied away from making the moves, but even really diagnosing the problem correctly. We haven't seen them really deal in any way, shape, or form.
As always, there are two basic reasons for inflation to rise: supply and demand. While demand remains high in the U.S., disruptions in the supply chain mean the prices tend to increase. As a result, the demand for certain goods and services is greater than the economy's ability to meet those demands.
In the United States, most of the major industries are controlled by 4 or 5, maybe 6 at most, companies, and they are using this opportunity of the pandemic in order to increase their prices and to use their monopoly power to gain more and more profits. But that's also driving up prices. They're deliberately driving up prices. And the third factor is the long-running policy by the U.S. government, the Federal Reserve in particular, to give huge, huge, huge trillions and trillions of dollars of money to Wall Street banks at very, very cheap rates, which has essentially started to debase the currency.
So while the inflation rate in 2020 was 1.23%, the following year it spiked to more than 7%. Now that's decreased the average consumer's purchasing power significantly. The status of weakened consumers could probably be captured best in a recent video showing looters raiding an Amazon delivery van during protests in Los Angeles.
Inflation is running pretty hot. Officially it's 7% CPI, but it's actually over 10% because CPI index does not really capture the full effect of inflation. The way it's going to affect the economy is already it will dampen down consumer spending, which is 2/3 of the economy. People will pay more in prices, won't be able to buy other things, and consumer spending will have a dampening effect on the first quarter recovery of the U.S. economy, which is already happening. We can see that.
some believed that U.S. officials would have no solution to control the economy other than resorting to more than 3 interest rate increases in the year 2022. Policymaking could also open new door. However, the widening gap in U.S. Congress means stalling initiatives that help no one.
Differences between the two major parties are definitely playing a role in what we're seeing here, supply chain, inflation. I mean, just the inability of the governments to really do much of anything as the two parties remain at odds mean that it's very difficult to actually promote any sort of policies that might ease the situation here. And I think certainly a lot of that can be laid at the doorstep of the Republicans. But I also think it is sort of a bipartisan reality that really goes back 30 or 40 years, where these sort of the supply chain practices, the just-in-time production, were things that were promoted and hailed and facilitated by, you know, the political system in America, where the monetary policy of the Federal Reserve, which is playing a role here, has been 100% bipartisan the whole way. But I do think that the current gridlock is playing a huge role. And I think that, quite frankly, it means that there is a challenge in producing policy.
Now, lawmakers are solely working on partisan grounds with little care for the average consumers, who are the final victims of the current situation. Considering all factors, U.S. economy could take years to recover.
The supply chain issues in the United States should be laid squarely at the door of corporate America. And everything regarding supply chain issues comes down to something called just-in-time production. And so this is something that actually started earlier in the 1980s, really, in the auto industry. But now basically every major corporation that's selling anything in America from a store has essentially gone to this mode of dealing with their supply chain, where you don't want to have any sort of goods on hand in a big way. You essentially want to just have exactly what you need to sell, and, you know, they're managing who buys what, how much, so that technically it's supposed to be that there's just enough so that no one isn't able to find what they want, but not enough that there's any sort of backlog in a warehouse, because the thought process is the more goods you have waiting in a warehouse, the less likely they are to, if you have more goods than you need in a warehouse, then that means that ultimately you aren't able to make profit. And the easiest, the whole reason for capitalism exists, of course, is to make profit.
All right, peeps, it's time we check in with Abbas Mutaqim.
Peace, and welcome back to the show. You know, COVID had me down for a second, but I'm back, and I'm ready to get back to rocking with y'all. So today on Power to the People, we will examine capitalism and why inflation is always a part of the capitalist system. Capitalism is when a few people own and control all the means of production in a society. This means that in reality, there's only a few capitalists, and everyone else who doesn't own the means of production is subjected to capitalist exploitation. This is because everyone works for the capitalist, as the capitalist owns the product that's produced, as well as the company that produces the product. We then sell our labor to the capitalist for a wage or for a salary. And this has created a world where 8 men, 6 of whom are American, control half the wealth on the earth. It's a system where the corporations and their politician lackeys, they control the market and the prices of the goods that we consume every single day. And a natural part of capitalism is inflation. Inflation is when the price of goods rises within the macro level of the economy. It's when whoever is selling the goods decides to increase the price on the good, which then sends a chain reaction throughout the whole economy. Those who control the means of production, aka the capitalists, they control this entire phenomenon. An example of macro level goods that affect the economy is oil. Oil produces multiple different products, and corporations set the price of its worth, and then this affects the price on everything in which oil is used to produce. And this creates a ripple effect throughout the whole economy. We don't go buy oil from the source. We go to a corporate-owned gas station and buy gas for the price that these gas corporations and that the oil industry decides on what the price should be. These are all arbitrary numbers that these capitals make up so that they can make mass profits. If we look at the Rockefeller family, one of the richest families in the world, they sit in their house, they sit in their office, and they don't do anything to physically get the oil, yet they make billions in profit. And part of inflation in America is these corporations deliberately crashing the economy. The capitalists buy stock when it's low and sells the stocks when the market is high. Then they crash the market, and then they buy stocks when the market crashes, and this price of stock is once again cheap. They repeat this process over and over and over again and make massive profits. That is why it's not a matter of if the stock market will crash, it's a matter of when. And all of this affects the prices of everyday products and creates inflation. We also saw inflation happen through price gouging, which has been happening throughout this COVID-19 pandemic. As this virus infected people, there arose a need for masks, tests, medical equipment, and other goods. Those who make the masks and produce the equipment, oftentimes they decide to raise the price in order to make a higher profit. We saw countless examples of stores on Amazon selling COVID masks and tests at insane prices, when in reality, masks and tests should be given out for free to everyone because it's a public good. But that does not happen under capitalism, as profit drives everything under the capitalist system. Politicians, aka the ruling class, they also take advantage of this. Politicians, they knew the severity of the COVID-19 pandemic long before the general public did. And a minimum of 75 lawmakers, they invested their money in companies that had played a major role in the response to COVID-19. This allowed for politicians to get rich off of having insider knowledge and corporations to get rich because of the increased purchasing of stocks and the market rising. These politicians were worried about their own pocketbooks while stay-at-home orders were on the way and when the masses of people were about to deal with massive job loss and increased poverty. NFL lineman Tyler Crosby, he asked an important question. If, as an NFL player, we aren't allowed to bet on games, why are government officials allowed to buy stocks and stock options? This exposes the system for what it is. This whole market is rigged for the corporations and politicians. You can't pick yourself up by the bootstraps in a system that is controlled for them to win. The corporations and its politicians, they decide the prices of the market. We have no decision-making power. And this is the part of exploitation by capitalism. When the system isn't controlled by the people and it's instead controlled by the capitalists, corporations can do whatever they want, when they want. They exploit the masses of people no matter what the crisis is, whether it's a recovery from a natural disaster or a virus like COVID-19. If we want to put an end to inflation, we have to put an end to imperialist capitalism. Capitalism is why inflation happens, and we must understand this. This is power to the people.
In the worst case scenario, a House under the control of Republicans could end up in an impeachment effort against President Joe Biden. That could further weaken his chances of re-election and prepare the grounds for the return of business mogul Donald Trump to power. Well, thank you for watching, everyone. I'm your host, Daniel Arya. Do make sure you tune in next week when we come back with another episode of We the People. Goodbye for now.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastorday.com/en. And now, you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.